Perek Yudalad of Yeshayahu, the 14th chapter, which we will study today, contains four distinct sections. The first section, Psukim Aleph and Bet, is really a continuation of yesterday's chapter, of Perek Yud Gimel. As we saw in Perek Yud Gimel, Masa Bavel, the prophecy of Bavel, was a description of the fall of Bavel, emphasizing the idea that even though Bavel was the most powerful kingdom, and the religious center of Mesopotamia, it nevertheless can fall because God is causing it to fall, and because Bavel is not eternal. As part of this prophecy of the fall of Bavel, we find the first two psukim of Perek Yudalet, which speak about the impact of the fall of Bavel from the point of view of its influence on Jewish history. These psukim clearly refer to the period of the fall of Bavel, the period shortly after the building of the second Beit HaMikdash, the period of Ezra and Nehemiah. In that period, as we know from later on in Sefer Yeshayahu, as well as from other books of the time of Bayit Sheni, there was a certain element in Persian and Mesopotamian circles who sought to join the Jewish people. And this prophecy speaks about that period, when the second Beit HaMikdash will be built, Babylon will have fallen, and a certain percentage of the Babylonians and Persians will seek to join the Jewish people. The chapter begins. Ki yirachem Hashem et Yaakov uvachar od b'Yisrael, v'hinicham al admatam, v'nilva hager alayhem, v'nispichu al Beit Yaakov. When Hashem will have pity upon Yaakov and once again choose Israel, he will allow them to rest upon their land. Then the ger, the convert, or the stranger, will join together with them, and they will be added onto Beit Yaakov. Ulkachum amim vehevium el mekomam. Nations will bring them. Them refers to the totality of Beit Yaakov, which now includes also these converts. Ulkachum amim vehevium el mekomam. Nations will bring them and cause them to dwell in their place. This perhaps refers to the declaration of Cyrus that set in place the process which led to the return of the Jews to Eretz Israel. Ulkachum amim vehevium el mekomam. Vitnachalum Beit Yisrael al admat Yashem la'avadim velishvachot. When the Jews will return to their land together with these converts, Beit Yisrael will make them, these converts, into avadim und shvachot, into maidservants and manservants. V'hayu shovim l'shoveihem v'radu b'nogseihem. Those who were once the captors will become captive, and the Jews will rule over those who punish them. In other words, the Babylonians and the Persians who seek to become members of the Jewish people will, upon return of the Jewish people to Eretz Israel, find themselves in the role of servants and female servants. This seems to be in keeping with the law in Sefer Vayikra, which makes it possible for Jews to keep non-Jewish servants as permanent servants. Why is this emphasized here? This is emphasized here as part of the idea of showing Vinahapochu, the overturning of the current political order. Current political order, which the prophet is speaking about, is how the Babylonians are the chief people of the world. Time will come, God says, when the Babylonians who will join the Jewish people will find themselves servants to the Jews. In other words, the current state of affairs with Babylon as the most powerful kingdom will not last forever. And this is how Perek Yudalet concludes the message of Perek Yud Gimel. The idea that the eternal might of Babylon will be broken, so much so that those Babylonians who join the Jewish people, rather than being leaders and kings of the Jewish people by virtue of their Babylonian descent, will have a subservient place in the Jewish people because of their Babylonian descent. Now, this is not strictly in keeping with the way that one is supposed to treat a convert, certainly, but it is a message that is specifically directed at the political reality in which the prophet is found.
and at describing the reversal of Babylon's position of dominance. The next section of the Perek, from Pasuk Gimel all the way to Pasuk Kaf Gimel, describes the fall of Sargon II, king of Assyria. Now, as I noted when we began Perek Yud Gimel, Masav Avel, the Mefarshim there discuss how the fall of Babel is typologically similar to the fall of Assyria. And these events in Perek Yudal, this description of the fall of Sargon, is strictly speaking, from Pasuk Gimel all the way to Pasuk Kaf Gimel, is really strictly speaking a description of the fall of Sargon II, king of Assyria, which took place in 705 BCE. We know about the fall of Sargon II from the historical documents of the times. We know that Sargon II, who had been one of the most powerful kings Assyria had had, and who followed in the footsteps of Tiglath-Pileser III in conquering many areas of Eretz Israel and in exiling the Jews from the northern kingdom of Israel, the area around Shomron, we know that this king, Sargon II, who was so very powerful, was killed in 705 on the battlefield in northern Mesopotamia on what's today the Iranian border, and died there, and his body was left unburied for a substantial amount of time because of the weakness of Assyria at that particular moment. The Navi uses this image to show how God is capable of defeating the mighty Assyrian kingdom. And in that sense, this is really a very beautiful, I wouldn't say it's beautiful, but it's a very apt continuation of Masa Bavel. Because like Masa Bavel emphasizes that God is more powerful than Babylon, so too does this section emphasize that God is more powerful than Sargon II, king of Assyria. One might argue that, Masa Bavel, which we just read about, speaks about the period of the fall of Bavel in 538 BCE. It was the period that's before and right after the beginning of the building of the second Beit HaMikdash. That's true. And this section, the section from Perek Yudal at Pasuk Gimel until Pasuk Kaf Gimel, is about Sargon II, who died in 705. That is true. The book of Yeshayahu is not organized historically. We've gone from a later period now to a slightly earlier period. But the theme remains, the theme that God can bring down tyrants, that is the theme that unites this material. Now let us look now at Pasuk Gimel. V'aya b'yom haniach Hashem lecha me'otzbecha u'mirogzecha u'min ha'avoda ha'kasha asher u'badbach, when God will allow you rest from the difficult travails which you have suffered. Then, v'nasata ha'mashal hazeh al melech Bavel. You shall declare this parable or this song upon the king of Bavel. Now, I just told you that this is about Sargon II, king of Assyria. Here it's saying it's about the king of Bavel. That's true. Sargon II of Assyria also conquered Bavel. He was one of the kings who accomplished that challenging and controversial task of conquering the holy city, Bavel. And therefore, this chapter speaks about him as the king of Babel. And there's a certain irony in this. One would thought that the king of Babel would be even more permanent than the king of Assyria, because Babel is the holy city. And yet, v'nasata ha'mashal hazeh al melech Babel, speak about Sargon II, king of Assyria, and speak of how non-permanent and how ephemeral he is. Ech shavat noges shavata madheva. How has the tyrant, the one who carries the whip, the noges, how has he ended? Shavata madheva, his great pride has been defeated. Shavar Hashem mater reshaim. Okay, Shavar Hashem mater reshaim shevet moshlim. God has broken the staff of the wicked, the rod of the rulers. Make amim be'evra, makat bilti sara. Rodeva af goyim. Murdaf bli chashach. He who smote nations angrily is now smitten a blow which will not go away. He who ruled nations with anger is chased without being saved. Pasuk Zayin, Nachashakta kol haaretz, patzchu rina. The whole world is now at rest because Sargon II is dead and he will not conquer any countries anymore. Patzchu rina, the whole world is singing. Gam beroshim samchu lecha. Even the cypress trees are happy at your death. Arzei Levanon, so too the cedars of Lebanon. Me'az shachavta lo ya'ale hakoret aleinu. What do the cedars of Lebanon say? They say, from the time that you have lain down, in other words, from the time of your death, no one comes to cut us down. As we said several times in Sefer Yeshayahu, the Assyrian kings were very proud of the fact that they could chop down the cedars of Lebanon, and here the cedars of Lebanon are rejoicing, our chopper is dead. Our chopper will no longer cut us down. I skip a couple of psukim and continue pasuk yud bet, verse 12. Ech nafalta mishamayim heilel ben shachar. How have you fallen from the skies, O star, the son of the dawn? This is a reference to the morning star. Shachar here should be translated the morning star. How have you, the great star, fallen from the skies? Nigdata la'aretz cholesh al goyim. You have been chopped down to the ground, you who ruled over nations. Ve'ata amarta bilvavecha hashamayim e'ele mima'al lechochve'el arim kisi'i. You said in your heart that you would go up the sky and place your throne above the stars. Ve'eshev behar mo'ed bi'arketei tzafon. I would place my throne at the mountain Mo'ed, at the edges of the north. A'ale al ba'mote av adame le'elyon. I will ride on the clouds. I will be like the Most High. And of course, this seems to be a reference to the Assyrian artistic portrayal of the god of Assyria riding on the clouds. And the Sargon is saying, I think of myself as a god. I'm like a god. I go up in the clouds. Ach, el she'ol turad el yarkete bor. Rather than going up to the clouds, the Navi says, you will go down to Sheol. You will go down to the very depths of the netherworld. And those who watch you will say, Ro'echa elecha yashkichu, those who watch you. And Ro'echa here may refer to those who see your defeat. As we know in Sefer Tehillim and Hallel, we say, the idea of Ro'echa refers to those who, Vani erev esonai, I will see my enemies. It means I will see my enemies' defeat. Here too, ro'echa means those who see your defeat. Ro'echa elecha yashgichu, elecha yitbonanu. All those who see you will look at you and wonder about you. Hazeh ha'ish margish ha'aretz, mar'ish mamlachot. Is this the man who caused the whole world to shake? Sam tevel kamidbar ve'arav haras, who made the world like a wilderness and destroyed its cities. Asirav lo fatach baita, he didn't send any prisoners home. All the kings of the nations, all of them, rest in peace, or rest in honor, each one in his home. So all the kings are buried, but you, Sargon II, this great and powerful and mighty terrorizing king, you were thrown out of your grave like a rejected branch, like some branch of the royal family, or some branch of a family which was rejected. Levush harugim mitoane charev, your dale av nevor kefeger murvas. You went down into the stones of the pit like a rejected corpse, like a trampled corpse. The idea that you wore the clothes. You did not wear a proper burial shroud. Rather, you wore the clothes in which you were killed. You are loaded with swords. The swords of the enemies who defeated you on the battlefield are still stuck into you, and you're thrown into the stones of a pit like a trampled corpse. Lo techari tam bikura. You will not dwell with your forefathers in burial. Ki artzecha shichata, amcha haragta. You have destroyed your nation. You have destroyed your land. You have killed your nation. What is this a reference to? This perhaps is a reference, again, to Sargon II's great accomplishment, namely Sargon II's conquest and destruction of Babylon, which from the Assyrian point of view was an unforgivable sin. conquering of the holy city. And here the prophet is laughing at Sargon and saying, you think that you were left to die on the battlefield because of your conquest of Babylon, because you challenged your own gods. Don't you realize who it is who really defeated you? That idea of who it is who really defeated you is articulated in the next section of this chapter, in verses 24 to 27. Nishba Hashem Tzvakot Lemor, Im Lo Kaasher Dimiti Ken Hayata Vecharsher Ya'atzti Hitakum. God swears, saying, isn't what I imagined, that will in fact happen, and what I planned, that will come to pass. And this is, of course, an intentional contrast to two themes which we've seen earlier in Sefer Yeshayahu. First of all, the idea of Kaasher Dimiti Ken Hayata, as I imagined it, so it would be. In Perek Yud, in chapter 10, we saw that Assyria does not want to follow God's plan. There we read, "V'hu lochen yedameh," that Assyria does not imagine things to follow God's plan. And here God is saying, no, things follow my plan. Just as I imagined, it would happen. "V'cha asher ya'atzvihi takum," that which I plan, it will come to pass. And this is a reference to Perek Chet of Yeshayahu, where he says, "Utsu etza vitufar, dabru davar velo yakum." The world can plan, the world can make strategies, but it will be overturned. And here God is saying, that which I plan will in fact happen. Ka'asher ya'atzdihi takum. What is God's plan? Lishbor ashur be'artzi ve'al harai avusenu. I will break Assyria in my own land, and on my mountains I will cause them to suffer defeat. V'sar me'alehem ulo, and from the Jews, presumably is the reference here, from them, the yoke of Assyria will be departed, v'subalo me'al shichmo yasur, and the burden of Assyria will be removed from their shoulders. So this is the idea that God can defeat Assyria. God can defeat Assyria, even more specifically, in God's land. Now, what is this a reference to, the defeat of Assyria in Eretz Israel, or is this a reference to the defeat of Assyria in some other country? That is difficult to specifically understand here. The reference, Artsi, seems to indicate this is a reference to the defeat of Assyria in Eretz Israel. And since we only know of the defeat of Assyria in Eretz Israel in the time of Sancheriv, 701 BCE, this may be a reference to that period. But the central idea here is that God's plan will happen, Assyria will be defeated, and it is because of God's plan that Assyria is defeated. Again, there's maybe a certain disjunction between Psukim Gimel to Kaf Gimel, which speak about the defeat of Sargon II, 705, and these Psukim, which may be a reference to 701, but they are put together because of the common theme. It is God who controls the plan. It is God who is in control of the political plan. The Perek ends with a different prophecy, which we can also date very specifically. Again, this is chronologically disjunctive. It is not part of the same chronological sequence. But it does have certain thematic continuity. And this is the prophecy at the very end of the Perek, from Pasuk Kafchet to Pasuk Lamed Bet, which is Bishnat Mot HaMelech Achaz Hayah HaMasa HaZeh. In the year of the King Achaz's death, the following burden of prophecy came upon the prophet. What is this? What is that year? That is the year 727. BCE. The year of Ahaz's death is also the year of the death of Tiglath-Pileser III, king of Assyria, who is known, among other things, for conquering the Galil, as we saw in chapters 7 and 8, and also for threatening Pleshet. Pleshet is the land of Philistia, the area around Aza, Ashkelon, Ashdod, and so on. He, in fact, conquered this area, and the people of Pleshet are here being warned by the prophet, Al tismichi Pleshet kuleich, ki nishbar shevet makech. Don't rejoice, all of Pleshet, just because the rod of your of the one who smote you is now broken. From the root of a snake, an even more dangerous snake will come forth, and its fruit is a flying fiery serpent. The idea here is that the defeat of Pleshet by the king of Assyria is only a prelude to an even more dangerous king of Assyria coming to the fore. Now,
what should the people of Plesha do? Pasuk Lut Lamed Aleph. I'm skipping Pasuk Lut Lamed. Pasuk Lamed Aleph, verse 31. Helili Shar Zaki Ir Namog Pleshet Kulech. Rather, you should run away. The gate should scream. The cities should cry out. All of Pleshet should run away. Why? Because smoke ki mitzafon ashan ba ve'en boded b'mo'adav. From the north, smoke comes, and there is no one alone in its gathering. In other words, the Assyria will come to once again smite Pleshet. Umaya anem al achei goy. But what should the emissaries of nations respond? Now, who exactly are these emissaries? That's a little bit difficult, but it seems from the continuation that these are emissaries to Jerusalem from Pleshet. And we know that in the time of Sargon, after the time of TP3, this time of Tiglath-Pileser III, in the time of Sargon, which would roughly 716 BCE, 712 BCE, we know that emissaries came from Pleshet to Jerusalem and asked Jerusalem to join Pleshet in a rebellion against Assyria. And so there may have been earlier emissaries also, speaking in 727. What should be answered to these emissaries from the nations? The answer is, Ki Hashem Yisad Sion Uva Yechesu Aniyei Ami. God has established Zion, and in Zion, the poor ones or the low ones of my nation will take refuge. Zion will be a place of refuge. Jerusalem will be unconquered. This is a reference to the fact that although the Assyrian kings did manage to devastate and conquer Pleshet, they were unsuccessful in devastating and conquering Yerushalayim. Thus, the true author of the destruction of Pleshet is revealed. It is not simply that the Assyrian kings conquered Pleshet because they wished to do so and because they didn't wish to conquer Jerusalem. Rather, it is that the Assyrian kings have been successful in conquering Pleshet because God has allowed them to do so. They will not be successful in conquering Jerusalem because God will not allow them to do so. And so this is the theme of the last several verses. Pleshet should not rejoice, because Pleshet will in fact suffer. Philistia will suffer. Rather, it is Jerusalem who should take comfort, because God will protect Jerusalem. Here too we have an example of God's plan coming into action, rather than Assyrian programs. And so what unifies the chapter is the idea of God's plan coming into action. The chapter began with words that seem to be words of consolation, that the Babylonian and Persian Nilvim, those who join the Jewish people from the Babylonians and Persians, will themselves find themselves not the leaders of the people, but rather the servants of the people, which is meant to emphasize the reversal in fortunes, the Nahafochu, where the Babylonians and Persians are the leaders. The Babylonians and Persians were historically the leaders. They in future will be the servants. Then the chapter went into a long discussion of the death of Sargon II, king of Assyria, in 705, and a mockery of him who had conquered Babylon, who had chopped down trees, and who ultimately was not even buried. So great was Assyria's downfall in 705. A downfall from which it soon recovered, but it was a serious downfall in 705. Then three psukim, Kaf Dalad through Kaf Zayin, 24 through 27, that emphasized God's plan is the one which will happen, not human plans, and it references the Utsu Eitza Vitufar prophecy. People plan and our plans are overturned. They speak, and their speech will not come forth. Rather, God's plans will happen. Ka'asher imlo ka'asher dimiti kein hayata v'ka'asher ya'atzdi hitakum. God swears, that which I imagined will happen, that which I planned will in fact come to pass. That is the emphasis of the whole perek, and the emphasis of Sukim Kafdal through Kafzayin. And then finally, we conclude with a masa, with a prophetic vision against Pleshet, against Philistia, which says Philistia should be scared of Assyrian advances, but Sion, Jerusalem, should not be scared.